Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next, you need the team to act on feedback fast. So you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/retro now for a free business plan trial to unlock advanced retro tools like private mode, voting, and two-way Jira syncing. That's Miro.com/retro now.
It's state of state. We got your Nittany Line update. It's a football discussion with Tom and Justin. So kick back and press play.
With former Penn State and NFL defensive back Justin King, I'm Tom Hanifin. This is State of State. This podcast is presented by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season. Major League Baseball, golf, the NBA, and NHL playoffs especially. All the latest stats, news, and scores are available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to betonline.ag today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. State of State is presented by BetOnline. The game starts here. Are you looking for a higher potential return on your savings? Turn to our sponsor, Save. As an SEC-registered investment advisor, Save safely combines the best parts of saving and investing with its market savings program. Market savings is a savings product that provides you with market returns instead of interest. The returns come from diversified investment portfolios based on your individual investment profile. The return from the investments is paid to you at the end of the selected investment term. But investing comes with risk, right? Well, with Save, your deposit is FDIC insured and never used for any investments. The current variable APYs are 9.07% for the 1-year product and 7.9% for the 5-year product. So, what does this cost you? Well, Save only charges a fee when your investments make you money. To learn more or to sign up, visit joinsave.com/state. That's joinsave.com/state. The link to the website is in the description of this podcast. State of State invites you to join Save.
Today on State of State, we're talking about all things Penn State pass rushers. What do the edge rushers specifically for Penn State have to offer going into 2024? We're primarily talking about the big four that you can think about at defensive end. Obviously, Abdul Carter, Denai Dennis Sutton, a lot of buzz around Jameel Lyons, Zariah Fisher in the mix, Amin Vanover, who certainly stood out over the last few months and in the back end of 2023, and some other names that are going to get in there and really affect the pocket for passers next season. Like, comment, subscribe, turn on notifications, and rate us. Follow us on social media, X, Instagram, and TikTok at State of State Pod. He is the belated birthday boy, Justin King, with a fabulous hairdo today. He's ready to go, so you got to check us out on YouTube if you want to see the style he's working with. I have no style. He has all of it. Justin, first of all, happy belated birthday. Secondly, I think the beginning of this conversation has to be with Abdul Carter, because you're going from linebacker to defensive end. And you and I were just talking about this before we started recording. There are so many people that when they saw Abdul Carter get the sticks, that number 11 as a freshman, immediately the expectations went through the roof. And to a degree in his freshman campaign, he provided some reasoning for why he was given that number, those correlations to LeVar Arrington, those correlations to Micah Parsons. Now, especially talking about Parsons, he's moving from linebacker to defensive end, something that Parsons has done with the Dallas Cowboys and something that he really didn't get a chance to do at Penn State, because he was just kind of learning the linebacker position, and he can kind of do it all now in the NFL. So let's start there, in that there's a comparison being made, maybe because of the numbers on his chest and back. But what do you reasonably expect from Abdul switching positions?
Well, making the switch from linebacker to defensive end, when you have the size, you should have the athletic ability, but if the size specifically, shouldn't be too hard if you're already a pretty above average or a very good linebacker, because it's less thinking, right? You can pin your ears back. Essentially, when you're talking about pass rushing matchups, athletic outside linebacker type of body, like Abdul Carter, or if you want to talk about like a Micah Parsons transition down to a defensive end, depending on how level of twitch, first step, speed they have, and all those different type of things when it gets to the pass rush artistry, it can get really interesting for them, because they understand close quarter combat, and then they just have that extra level of athleticism up against offensive linemen. So those guys typically work out well when you have less responsibilities of thinking and doing that. Like, playing linebacker is a tough task, man. You have to understand what the front's doing. There's a lot of reads from that standpoint. Because, I mean, we've seen it with Micah Parsons coming from defense and or pass rushing, or even at Penn State, where he was able to run around and kind of react to different situations. And we saw him flash in the crazy athleticism when he was blitzing, running down players, and just doing things sideline to sideline. And a lot of times we go sideline to sideline from a linebacker standpoint, it is athletically based, right? Sometimes you go downhill, is more diagnostic, whatever, depending on the type of player you are. But when we got to the NFL, I remember the first game he played, they hit him at linebacker. It was a lot of reading, and the quarterback was playing, I want to say it was Tom Brady or somebody, but was playing with him, and then he moved to the defensive end, and it was immediate disruption. Immediate, right? So like some of the things that we saw last year, whether it was in open space, whether it was Abdul Carter having a hard time getting guys to the ground, he made some splash plays and covers well. But when you think about putting his hand in the ground and his size and athleticism, him being like that apex predator type of prospect, those are the type of situations that really present a trump card to a defensive coordinator or to a defensive package when you're rushing a quarterback, or you can now just rush four guys and really cause some havoc. So I'm excited about the move, and I think him and Micah, we compare them a lot just because they're 11s. That's the power of branding. But I think they're completely different players with different skill sets. So yeah, it was see what happens, but I'm excited about it to watch it next year.
It's like that number 7 at LSU. It's like, careful who you put that crown on. You just want to temper expectations.
100%.
For Abdul, and I've been curious about this, and a lot of it I come to, okay, he's a freshman. There's not a lot of tape on him. You know what his high school tape is, so you're going to see possible glimmers that you might not see as a sophomore, that proverbial sophomore slump. And I wouldn't even necessarily refer to it as a slump. It just seems like last year was not as productive as the first year, and now he's moving to perhaps a more natural position. So I can understand that, and there's some people who have thrown that same thing at Nick Singleton, really burst on the scene as a freshman. People didn't know how to defend him, didn't know what his full skill set was at the college level, got a better idea of it as a sophomore. But both those years, he was under Manny Diaz, and it just seemed like freshman year, they were getting Abdul after the quarterback a lot more, and that seemed to kind of tail off in his sophomore year. Do you agree with that, or do you think it was learning curve, and he was kind of settling into the position a little more this past year?
Sometimes when you have those positions or you make plays early as an athletic-based player, you can kind of make a mistake and make a play, right? Because you're not thinking, like, you don't know what you don't know. And sometimes that's what
make beginners mistakes fast. Yeah.
Make mistakes fast, right? Like, or beginner's luck. So a lot of times we might have seen that. I don't say he's making mistakes his freshman year, but when you have more information, it's like a golf swing. You go out there sometimes, it's like, oh, I hit it. I'm hitting it. And next thing you know, you try to do something and you learn a little bit. Now you can't even hit the ball. And so sometimes that happens with players when they get out there and have some success, and that next year they're trying to add on top of that. There might be another level of expectation. Then they're trying to play up to that. I mean, it's across the board. I mean, RG3 is an example of that in the NFL, where he had success as a rookie, and the next year he wanted to do it. He wanted to be more of a pocket passer, regardless of how it worked out. But it's just a different fact pattern. And so for a linebacker transitioning down, it should be pretty smooth. And just the less thinking the better, but typically you have to study to get to that point. So I think it's a great move.
Differences between Manny Diaz's defense and Tom Allen's defense are certainly going to come into play. Do you expect the pass rush to be ramped up, tuned down a little bit? You know, Diaz was known for blitzing pretty consistently.
Yeah, I mean, knowing him as an attack type of any – just from a philosophical standpoint, I think any attack, aggressive attack defensive coordinator style wants to have the ability to rush four. So I'm not going to say that, you know, Manny Diaz and Tom Allen is not like, it's completely different from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm saying is that having a four down lineman that can rush the passer is a luxury in football in general. Let's think about the crazy 18-0 Patriots football team. They lost because of a front four defensive lineman. I know all the Giants and the Eli Manning people. No, it was the front four that beat the that beat the Patriots. But literally, because when you understand like Spags' defense and how it operates, for him to be able to get pressure with those four guys, Strahan, Tuck, Freddie Robbins, Jay Alford, shout out to Jay Al, old Penn State alumni. Like that, it was what made the defense and the pressures to be able to operate. Because I played in the defense. I played in that defense when we didn't have four down linemen rushing. Mm-hmm. And trust me, if those blitzes don't get home and you don't create certain mismatches, it's tough. So I think Abdul or having athletic defensive linemen creates mismatches. It creates pressures. It unlocks the defense similar to a number one corner does, in just a different manner, right? When we talk about that front seven. So, I mean, when it comes to defensive line play, defensive line coaching, I think is incredible, because I think that in itself is like a master sensei type of position. Like you don't just jump out of bed and learn how to coach defense alignment. Like there's some rah-rah guys, but then there's like actual coaches and technicians. And it seems like Deion Barnes is a mixture. I can't even say of a rah-rah, but more of a technician and someone that has put the proof in the pudding from being able to play, learn the tactical skills of the position, talent develop and acquire, and then also understand the technicals behind defensive line play, because it is a very detailed position.
Hats off to Deion Barnes. On three has a projection here from Jesse Simonton, so it's all subjective, but he put Penn State as the 10th best pass rush D-end edge unit, whatever you want to call it, in the country. So that's up for debate. One's Ohio State, according to Simonton. Two, Michigan. Three, Georgia. Four, Oregon. Five, Clemson. Six, Ole Miss. Seven, Notre Dame. 8 Florida State, 9 Tennessee, 10 Penn State. Again, entirely up for debate. What's not up for debate is, according to Pro Football Focus, because you can just count this anywhere, the most edge rushers by school currently on NFL rosters. Number one tied is Ohio State and Michigan with 9 apiece. Number two tied for 7, Georgia and Penn State. So the proof is in the pudding. Deion Barnes has only been the defensive line coach now for a season, so you can't accredit all of that to him, but the fact that the assembly line continues to churn at that position is really, really encouraging. Justin, as we're talking about Abdul, do you get hung up on the statistics of pass rushers, specifically a guy like Abdul that we talked about at freshman campaign was very, very encouraging. 10.5 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks, about 56 tackles, 2023, 49 tackles, 5.5 TFL, 4.5 sacks. It dipped a little bit, but it seems like maybe you take all that information, you throw it out the window. This is a brand new slate for Carter.
I think every year is a brand new slate, but I think that's a different conversation than what production equals, right? Especially from the defensive line play. Because I think you can have a lot of sacks and be a productive player, but not necessarily good. like that can happen. Like guys, like offensive linemen whiff, like you can have a quick first step and really that can be figured out. And you can, I played with Chris Long where he had 1 year, he only had like 2 or 3 sacks, but he caused, if you watched the film, he caused havoc everywhere. He had like a great season and didn't show up in the sack total. So I'm a firm believer just from the philosophical approach of like watching the film to evaluate a player outside of the stats, being the stats or the what. I mean, the film is the how, right? And so when we get into those dynamics from, I mean, I'm saying that to say, like, I don't care too much. Like, he made an impact on the game. Like, he had tackles. You would like to see an increase in the production from sacks just from the standpoint of the team. But, I don't know what type of blitzes or when he's been pulled out to drop and not rushing or just all the different types of shots of a quarterback. There's just a lot of things that go into sack counts. And I've seen guys fall into sacks and not do anything and get a sack total versus a guy hold up a double team shed and make a 2-yard tackle and right. No one talks about it. So that's another one of my gripes with PFF, but that's another story for another day.
I know you hate PFF. And this one was more just one dude. Yeah. So,
but this was, it started off with the stats though. Cause we go from the production to like making the production and the number, right. And we try to minimize and commoditize the player and like what actually they're doing. And we try to make it so that a layman person can understand based on numbers. And it's like, I get it sometimes, but you know,
everybody just tried to do that with Chop Robinson, minimize what his ability is based on limited production numerically last year. Adisa Isaac had 7.5 sacks. So it was like, is that the greatest number ever put up? Not necessarily. The 2022 defense was putting up crazy TFL numbers. So it's all relative. And Odafe Owe years ago, same issue with him was, oh, the numbers aren't there.
For what though? Like what numbers? Because 4-3, 6-6, 4-3, 40. Yeah. Those numbers are there. Yeah. So like, I don't know what numbers we're judging on. That's why I get mad about just comments and fans. Like,
what numbers are we talking about?
What numbers are we talking about? Because like, it's like even in debates, I'm like hey, we
4-4-9 for Chop. That's the number.
That's right the there. Number.
Like, and then the number is the dollar figure. Once upon a time,
yeah. All the other numbers, like,
they'll come around. you mentioned the size for Abdul, 6'3", 250, and I do want to kind of cycle back to that because that's a really nice size altogether for a pass rusher.
What's Khalil Mack?
Say it again.
What's Khalil Mack? That sounds similar.
You want to look it up?
I got it.
Because at the same time, I look at the rest of this defensive end room, and if you start with Abdul Carter, then you have to jump to Denai Dennis Sutton, who's listed at 6'5", 270, and that is a very intriguing matchup considering the offensive tackle play that Penn State will see in the Big Ten, consistently very, very competitive, consistently offensive tackles going to the National Football League. What were Max statistics there?
No, 6'3", 270. There you go. Yeah, I mean, you think about that size, that boxy frame, and I mean, the Bosas are kind of like that. So when you think of that pass rush frame, it's like those explosive guys that can have power and have some level of a base to be shifty. I think that's what Micah is like, is pretty special about him. It's like his build is almost like a big point guard.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, point guard. but he's 6'3", 255. Mm-hmm. So that's and runs 4.3. So again, which numbers are we talking about?
It's freaking terrifying. It really is. So to my point about DDS, 6'5", 270, I wouldn't say Dennis Sutton has the same explosion that an Abdul Carter has. However, his length, his strength, it just eats up space. Now, when you watched Denai Dennis Sutton last year, what were elements of his game that you enjoyed and what are parts that it's like, hey, I got to see him put it together this year?
I mean, I think from the limited snaps that I did see, like when he did make plays, I liked his hand usage and just how he bent as that 6'5", 270-pound athlete, right? And to have that athleticism, engine, and some level of technical ability at a defensive end, that's just a recipe of success. So from that point, it's just a more of like repping out and getting that fact pattern so he understands what's going on, understanding the developmental fence around him with Deion Barnes, what they got going on at Penn State. So I would trust him to continue to develop. So that's how my brain works. Can he do this? Can he do that? What are his deficiencies? Oh, this is some good stuff. Who's helping him develop these things? Oh, he's real. Let's keep it going.
State of State is a proud supporter of Blue White Outfitters. Blue White Outfitters was created as a retail shop meant to highlight the confidence, competitiveness, and fearlessness of the elite athletes found throughout the history of Penn State University. Check out their Lockdown U and Lawn Boys merchandise today. All sales from Blue White Outfitters directly benefit Penn State student athletes. Visit www.bluewhiteoutfitters.com today.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it?
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/diagram now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more features like advanced shapes, dependency mapping, and two-way Jira syncing. Get started today at Miro.com/diagram. Now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
I find it so fascinating how positions ebb and flow in terms of the player's height, weight, measurables in terms of 40-yard dash, you know, all those things that are done on a track and not necessarily on the field in a gameplay. I always think about how monstrous Reggie White was, 6'5", 300 pounds. Is he going to beat you on a stopwatch? No, but literally the strongest man on the field and was able to throw people around. Fantastic handwork, fantastic footwork. Doesn't get enough credit for that.
And well, I might say he would beat you on a stopwatch probably in 10 yards.
Oh, me? Oh, absolutely.
I mean, not you. I'm just saying like, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like when you say, would he beat you in a stopwatch? Like that's where sometimes people lose track of like, those defensive linemen. Fair. Like, no, if you race them at a 10 yard, like what number are we talking about? Because they're probably faster than you.
That's the theme of this podcast. What numbers are we talking about?
What numbers are we talking about?
But my overall point being, as you saw defensive ends catching up with tackles, because you would just... You had these buildings for offensive tackles. And it's not to say that doesn't exist anymore. If anything, they're just more athletic and mobile. And you have seen them trim down a little bit. And then you have tackles hovering around 300, but they can get up to 340 or something like that. You don't necessarily want to see that. And then you see the defensive ends have come down. And Aaron Donald is a perfect example of an interior defensive lineman who just lit the world on fire, but was smaller and able to get that leverage point. So it's not necessary for you to be this big towering guy like a Calais Campbell. If anything, if you're at that 6'3", 250 mark and you have that explosion, you're going to be able to beat some guys simply because of the leverage points, as opposed to being nose to nose. Denied Dennis Sutton is going to have some challenges that different body types are not going to encounter. And then it's for Denied Dennis Sutton to take that leap here in his third season. We saw flashes in his freshman year, didn't get as much playing time as Abdul Carter, but got on the field more so at defensive end, more snaps at defensive end, really played a lot last year, showed that he can be violent. Now coming into this season, it's like, hey, it's no longer a rotational situation where we have Chop and Adisa Isaac up here and you're the third guy. Deny Dennis Sutton is going to be counted on to create pressure, create sacks, tackles for loss, even turnovers. Do you think he's up to the task?
100%. I mean, he's has some evidence of impact. If you watch his games last year, like, he showed up, he did flash. And again, you have those. Again, football is a trait and genetic based sport. He has the traits and genetics, and he has all the upside and the coaching. And I expect big things from him this season with him and Abdul on both ends. Like you said, working like a Zariah Fisher into the mix. I think there's a lot of good things going on in that defensive line room.
I do want to get to Amin Vanover and Jameel Lyons because they're probably the next two guys on the depth chart. Sure. But you mentioned Zariah Fisher, and it's so funny. Watching him on tape, to me, Justin, I've looked at him, and I think I've said this on this show. I've said it to you off air for sure, is that I'm like, man, he looks kind of undersized for the position. And then I'm like, I go on, you know, gopsusports.com, and they got him listed at 6'3", 262. And I think I'm more surprised at the height than anything. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you go on these rosters and some things get finessed a little bit. You know, I understand that. But I was like, 262 doesn't shock me, because I was like, he always looked like a powder keg type of guy. I was like, he was powerful, he was nimble, but he just looked like, if anything, that leverage battle that I was just talking about might have been too drastic of a difference. So, you know, you take everything with a grain of salt. Is he exactly 6'3", 262? I don't know, but he's got burst.
You know who was 6'2", 265? Tom Bahali. So, like, that's what I play with. You know what I'm saying? So, like, when you think of
gigantic. Yeah.
I mean, no, he didn't. I mean, when you think, when you see other defensive ends, but it goes back to like that body type that I was talking about. Like, when you think of guys that are boxy, when you think of like, okay, what's your immediate feel of their presence in your space, right? Like, I think that, I mean, obviously some of your athletic ability, what you can do, sure. But you know, it does line up of how they might look. So him being a thicker guy, broad shoulders, just shows that he's like a, it just shows more of his physique, as I guess I would say.
And he is a redshirt senior. So first season was in 2020, played in 13 games last year, two in 2022, eight in 2021, and just one during the pandemic season. So unfortunately, that pandemic season, you just almost entirely threw out the window. But a guy who's been a part of the program, has stuck around to be developed, and has stuck around to a point where you're going to see him on the field right. In 2024. And it just behooves you to have depth at that position. And again, it's going to be a very challenging year for Penn State, and this defense is going to be relied upon to create pressure and get the ball back for the offense. And it was something I was talking about with Thomas Frank Carr last week, had him on the show. He was talking about last year, the offense was very much built to give way to the defense, that being Penn State's defense, to be like, this is our strength. We're going to rely on them to help us win ball games. The hope is that isn't necessary this year, and that Andy Kotelnicki can do a little bit more, but I don't necessarily see that big of a drop off from the 2023 defense to the 2024 defense. And the depth at pass rusher, Fisher being a part of that, is a big reason why. Would you agree with that?
I would. I mean, Abdul up there, like you say, you brought up Lyons. I didn't see him play too much yet, but from just, again, athletic ability, from the standpoint of seeing him at practice, another athletic freak out there, right? And so when you have those guys up front, like the collect avatars on the edge, like from a personnel standpoint. But when you have those guys up there, man, it gives you a chance. It gives you a chance to win. I will say that.
Jameel Lyons, a sophomore out of Philadelphia, Roman Catholic, my guy. He's 6'5", 252. And then you got Amin Vanover, a senior, 6'4", 260 out of Newark, New Jersey, and St. Joseph's. He has some real size at defensive end. I mean,
that length, man, that length. It's hard to get those edges.
It's the length. It's the athletic ability. Like, these aren't just big dudes who stand in a phone booth or something like that. Like, there's bounce. There is that ability to bend that you always talk about with Chop and Adisa.
Because it's funny, like, when you are a football fan, I think you get lost in the skill positions, right? The quarterbacks, the running backs, the receivers. And it wasn't really even for me. Like, I always had respect for, like, the defensive line and offensive line. It wasn't until I really got into personnel and really worked into the business till I understood the value that they place amongst the entire operation. And then when you start looking at those guys from like just a monetary value standpoint, defensive ends and offensive tackles are the most impressive athletes when you put it all in comparison. I mean, obviously DBs, and I'm a corner, I mean, switched up athletes, small guys, and you can play with bigger guys. But when you find like those freaky left tackles or those big defensive ends that are athletic, and those are the closest thing you're going to get to. I mean, you hear the debate now about the NBA players. I don't want to get on anybody with Austin Rivers, but like those are the closest things that you're going to find to like, you know, NBA type of specimens. You know what I mean? And they're far few in between. So collect big guys.
You mentioned it, so I have to ask you, what did you think about that whole debate? NBA players, NFL, vice versa.
It's funny, right? Like they're. NBA players are athletic enough to play in the NFL. I mean, there's probably less NFL players that can make the transition to basketball because it's such a skill-based sport. But there's guys that can like play pickup basketball and play at a high level. But it's definitely, I think, easier to make that transition for a big guy like a power forward to tight end or a power forward to defensive end than it might be like a corner to point guard or a defensive end to a shooting guard or a defensive end to a three guard. Like just when you see like the functional athleticism, like dribbling the basketball is hard and all that stuff. But I think the transition over, there's a mental physicality, not just the physical component of playing basketball. It's like everybody's saying like, oh, they're physical and stuff, but there isn't another sport that is based on collisions. So I think that eliminates a lot of players. The ones that I think that can really make the transition though are like point guards, because they're typically tough, athletic, and super competitive. Like I think Russell Westbrook would, like, I think he can be an NFL corner. You know what I mean? Like Derrick Rose, like those type of guys, like I would lean my hat on, but like that physicality thing is a wait and see. But it's an interesting debate, but I have respect for all athletes, and I think NBA athletes are specimens, and I think NFL athletes are specimens, also have a couple screws loose. So like there's things that have to happen and have to be judged accordingly. So everybody respecting their own profession.
I was going to say, have De'Aaron Fox run a 10 and in against the safety.
There's just certain things, again, when we talk about putting things on paper or just evaluation, he jumps this out. No, it's different in football when you can look a man in the eye and it's like, yeah, I can hit you. Like, there's no foul. And like how you respond to this on this collision is a real thing. And that is something Ryan Clark brought up. Like, there's a callus that you build up, a mental callus that you build up like over your life if you're in those spots. But, you know, there's elite athletes that can make the transition and be outliers, like Antonio Gates and stuff.
Jimmy Graham. But again, that's similar. Body type. Julius Peppers was a power forward, wound up playing defensive end. Jimmy Graham, power forward, wound up playing tight end for Antonio Gates as well. Like there's a lot of examples, but it's the position in basketball that's prepared for contact, that can handle contact on a football field,
the type of contact, right? Because it's not like
Chet a tight Holmgren's end get wrecked for
like a tight end is still out there to catch the football. Like Jimmy Graham was catching the football, you know, like Gates was catching the football. They weren't blocking.
And just kind of wrapping up in terms of the defensive end position, I don't want to discredit Smith Vilbert. Now, for me, and I'm curious what you think about this, he is a redshirt senior plus, 6'6", 284, has had his issues staying on the field, has certainly had his moments of, oh, there's something here. But that body type almost lends him to be rotational, and you know how much James Franklin loves to cross train players. So you might see him, you have seen him cycle in playing defensive tackle, playing in the interior. I just don't expect him to be in that top five of pass rushers that Penn State platoons out there, but you still expect Vilbert to be a contributor. That being said, I also expect a major pass rusher, or I hope he will be a major pass rusher, because I had high expectations for him in 2023 and it wasn't quite realized. Zane Durant at defensive tackle, height wise, doesn't have the ideal height, but power, leverage, explosion, it's all there. It's just a matter of, is he going to be able to put it together? Will it be this year? Will it be the year after? there's a lot of questions there in the interior of the defensive line. And it's not necessarily a position where, I don't know if Tom Allen's defense is going to rely on the defensive tackle to be like, you have to get after the quarterback. But what do you think about Vilbert and Durant in terms of lumping them in with the pass rushers?
I mean, I think you definitely could do that with Zane. You know what I mean? He made plays, and he was one of the chief catalysts of like the pass rush last year from the point of the defense. So definitely add him. Smith Vilbert, wait and see. I mean, it's hard to tell.
We're going to find out in 2024. We got a lot of time until August when training camp gets underway and we start seeing how these battles shake out. Let us know what you think in the comment section. Get at us on social media, X, Instagram, and TikTok at State of State Pod. Like, comment, subscribe, rate us, and turn on notifications. He's Justin. I'm Tom. See you next time.
Thank you all so much for joining us. This episode and our entire library of shows is available now on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Also, let us know what you think of the show on social media and check out all of our content on X, Instagram, and TikTok. Search for the handle at State of State Pod. State of State is presented by Bet Online and by Blue White Outfitters.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/brainstorm now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more brainstorming tools like private mode and voting. That's Miro.com/brainstorm now.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.